This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. Generous constitutional freedoms, weak law enforcement, and lightly patrolled borders have made Canada an inviting place for dangerous extremists or terrorists to set up shop, says a new report by the Library of Congress in Washington. The report, titled Nations Hospitable to Organized Crime and Terrorism, was completed in October by the Congressional Library's Federal Research Division under an arrangement with the Central Intelligence Crime and Narcotics Center. The report notes the recent cooperation between Canadian and U.S. officials in fighting terrorism. It also acknowledges Canadian steps to toughen anti-terrorism and immigration laws, but cast doubt on whether they go far enough, saying Canada's liberal democratic identity may limit adoption of sterner measures. Archbishop Desmond Tutu will challenge Tony Blair and George Bush today to apologize for their pursuit of a counterproductive and immoral war in Iraq. In a scathing analysis of the backdrop to the invasion, he will ridicule the dangerously flawed intelligence that Britain and the U.S. used to justify a military action which has made the world a great deal less safe. The intervention of the Nobel Peace Prize winner in the controversy over Iraq follows a series of deadly terrorist attacks in the country over the past week, including an armed raid on a police station on Saturday in which 22 people died. The electronic voting system designed for the forthcoming American election is fundamentally flawed and could undermine the trustworthiness of the entire U.S. democratic process, a scientist has told the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Paper ballots can be scrutinized to ensure they have not been misread or tampered with, but electronic votes recorded only as computer code cannot be checked to see the true intention of the voter, said David Dill, a professor of computer science at Stanford University in California. The system is in crisis. A quarter of the American public are voting on machines where there's very little protection of their votes. I don't think there's any reason to trust these machines, he said. More after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Looking cheerful and dressed in a dark gray business suit with a salmon-colored tie instead of his trademark uniform, Cuban leader Fidel Castro used humor to defend himself from U.S. hostility, ridiculing George W. Bush for his gaffes. Bush could not debate a Cuban ninth grader who knows more than he does, Castro said in a speech to an audience of 1,400 economists who were in stitches when he read some of Bush's more insipid statements. Castro quoted Bush as saying, "I will have a foreign-handed foreign policy. I know how hard it is for you to put food on your family. More and more of our imports come from overseas, and the most important job is not to be governor or first lady in my case." For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news. You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you've got an old wreck of a car with a busted engine, you can put the shiniest coat of paint that there is on it, but that old wreck still won't take you anywhere. This reality seems to have escaped the Bushites, who keep slapping shiny new paint on their old wreck of an economic policy. The latest comes in response to the growing crisis of job losses in American manufacturing. In George W.'s 3-year tenure, nearly 3 million manufacturing jobs have been lost. These are usually the best-paying jobs in town, and when they go, so do local businesses that count on those workers to be customers, and soon the town's whole middle-class future dries up. This year, even though stock prices, corporate profits, and CEO pay are on the rise, American factories continue to shed jobs, and the wages of most workers are either stagnant or falling. So the Bushites painting crew has rushed right out with a bright new color they call a comprehensive strategy to address the challenges to U.S. manufacturers. It offers nothing but the same old corporate giveaways that this crew always put forward. More tax breaks, less environmental protections, more nuclear power, and more limits on the ability of consumers and workers to sue corporations for wrongdoing. To add sparkle to this coat of paint, the Bushites also call for a new President's Manufacturing Council to, get this, give corporate leaders more say in government. More say? These guys already own the White House, most of Congress, and the judiciary. They need more say like Rush Limbaugh needs another dose of painkillers. The Bushites' latest paint job was revealed at a media event staged in an Ohio factory. But even as Commerce Secretary Don Evans was laying it on thick, executives at a factory in neighboring Michigan were saying adios to their 2,700 workers, notifying them that their factory was being moved to Mexico. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get America moving, we don't need new paint. We need a new engine.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's, and here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And happy President's Day. Today, the merger of George Washington's birthday, Abe Lincoln's birthday, and all the presidents now. We're supposed to celebrate everybody's birthday today. Happy President's Day. And George Washington, our quote for the day, as mankind becomes more liberal. Now, you see, back in those days, and right up until basically the advent of right-wing talk radio, our form of government was referred to as a liberal democracy. Technically, it's a constitutionally limited republic, but broadly speaking, all around the world, people understand that a government which is run by representatives elected by its citizens for the benefit of its citizens is known as a liberal democracy. Anyhow, George Washington, here's George Washington's quote, our President's Day quote, as mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. President George Washington at the time that he said that. It may not be such great news in Iraq. And Salon.com had this interesting article, Iraq may be slipping into civil war. There's a growing consensus, and this, of course, is not anything new. I mean, before we invaded Iraq back in March, there were scholars all over the world, particularly in the Middle East, who were saying this thing is, Iraq is an artificially assembled nation by the British, and the British got thrown out back, around the time of World War I. They couldn't handle it. But basically, you've got fundamentally or functionally three different nations there. Used to be four. I mean, Kuwait used to be part of Iraq, which Saddam tried to reassemble in his 34th province or 54th province, April Gillespie, but that's a whole other story. But you've got up in the north the Kurds, who also part of Kurdistan is in northern Iraq, and part of Kurdistan is in eastern Turkey. And the Kurds would very much like to have Kurdistan back. They had Kurdistan for thousands of years, and they'd like it back. And that's 10, 15, 20% of the population of Iraq, depending on how you count and where you draw your lines and who you call a Kurd. Then you've got the Sunnis, the Sunni Muslims, who are in the center part of the country. And the group from which Saddam came and to whom he bestowed most of the benefits of his beneficence, of his rule. And those Sunni areas, the Sunni triangle, it's sometimes referred to, the Sunni areas seem to be the areas where the people are the most upset, you know, about what's going on. And then you got all these Shiites in the south. So more than 60%, or roughly 60% of the entire population of the country are the Shia in the south. And we've got this Shiite cleric, this grand Ayatollah, who's saying, well, why don't we just have elections and let one man, one vote? No women, of course. Another discussion there, but anyway. And let's see who wins. Well, the United States is a little reluctant about that because the Shiites will almost certainly win. And their grand Ayatollah, although he's been giving lip service to democracy, we've heard that before, you know, when Fidel Castro threw out Batista, Nixon and Eisenhower was president. Nixon was in charge of the what was called the Cuba Working Committee, which was in the White House to deal with the Cuban situation. And for a little while there, they welcomed Castro. We didn't do anything to stop him from throwing out Batista, even though Batista was our dictator. Because the consensus was, the belief was, that Castro, while he might be, you know, kind of a populist, maybe even a bit of a socialist, he wasn't going to be a communist. I mean, the guy had tried out for the New York Yankees baseball team at one point. And he had all his rhetoric about how he loved America. And we're hearing the same kind of stuff coming from the Shiite leader now. And of course, these aren't the only examples. Yeah, but the fear is that if he wins in an election, or the Shia win power in an election, that they will institute an Iranian-style theocracy. Now, the flip side of that is that that actually, over the short term, might be a bad thing. Over the long term, might be a good thing, because the Iranian-style theocracy in Iran is falling apart. Why? Because of an internal democracy movement. And the thing that has slowed down the disintegration of the theocracy in Iran in the last year is our intervention in Iraq. It's caused the Iranians to get nervous about us. It's caused them to increase their nuclear program. And it has caused more of the average Iranian to say, well, you know, we may have a bunch of religious dictators running our country, but at least it's our religious dictators running our country and not American people running our country. So, anyhow, this article on Salon.com, the fault lines are emerging for a possible civil war. A senior U.S. official, speaking on condition of anonymity, agreed that the civil war was possible. This is from the article in Salon, Iraq may be slipping into civil war, by Hamza Hendawi. Agreeing the civil war is possible, citing conflicts that erupted in the former Yugoslavia and Soviet Union after the collapse of communist authoritarian rule. So this is what happens. You have a nation that is basically held together by an iron fist. And if you don't plan very, very carefully for the transition, if you're trying to do it from the outside in, then you get this disintegration that can be very destructive, that very often leads to civil war. And, you know, the Chechen situation, the situation in Slovenia and Serbia, Bosnia, the former Czech republics. And on the other hand, if you have a country that undergoes a transformation from a dictatorship to democracy as a result of an internal democracy movement, people rising up and taking back their nation, as has happened in over 100 countries in the last 50 years around the world. I mean, it's just amazing, the wave of democracy. In 1900, there were, you know, depending on how you define democracy, somewhere between 10 and 35 or 40 democratic nations in the world. There's now 81 nations that are fully democratic and over 140 that have multi-party systems and elect their leaders. There's only 45, depending on how you count, 45 or so nations that are run by absolute autocrats any longer. Yeah, but George Bush wasn't content to sit back and let it happen or even encourage it from the inside out. We had to go in from the outside in. And if Iraq falls into a civil war, it is going to be a mess to end all messes. It's just going to be incredible. Gareth Stansfield of the Institute of Arab and Islamic Studies at England's University of Exeter says the idea of the Shiites inheriting power as the Americans withdraw and it making for a gradual transition, which is the Bush plan now. He says it flies in the face of Iraq's history of the past 80 years to imagine that the Sunnis will accept Shiite domination or allow them to rule. He says the potential for civil war is already in place. And then, of course, you got the Kurds, who just as soon would be left alone rather than being ruled by either the Shiites or the Sunnis. The Kurds being relatively secular, also Muslim, but of a different variety and more secular broadly. So, some general thoughts on this too. I've got a sound clip here. This is the Carnegie Endowment, Joseph Cirincione of the Carnegie Endowment. Talking about this whole situation and the mess that we've stepped into.
So did everybody think before the war that Saddam had weapons? Well, as a matter of fact, that part is true. Most of us thought that there was something there, that it was likely, and we said this at Carnegie, that it was likely that he had chemical stockpiles, probable that he had some biological weapons, some anthrax left. But we made a distinction between the threat that those stockpiles would represent, which was really a tactical, a low-level threat.
Like he could use it against Iran, as he in fact did in the war.
Mainly regional, to the kind of threat that would be represented by a nuclear weapon or an operational link to Al-Qaeda. And we found no evidence that either of those two existed. So therefore, war was not necessary.
War was not necessary, and we found no evidence. And this is just, as Robert Wexler says, the American people, we deserve some answers on this stuff.
The evidence presented in this report, coupled with Mr. Kaye's recent statements on Capitol Hill, should send a resounding message to the White House that the American people deserve clear and exhaustive answers to questions that remain regarding the veracity of the president's pre-war intelligence claims. The president's words thus far have been cheap, and unless an independent investigation proves otherwise, history will judge George W. Bush harshly for the events of the past year.
Yeah, it really goes beyond this. I mean, now Bush has put together this commission. Wexler's thoughts on this.
While I applaud the president for assembling a 9-person commission to examine U.S. intelligence concerning the proliferation of WMD, the commission itself is fatally flawed. First of all, even if the commission is bipartisan, the fact that it was appointed by President Bush himself presents an obvious conflict of interest in producing impartial results. Moreover, reports that the investigation will not be complete before the election suggest a calculated attempt on the part of the administration to exonerate President Bush of responsibility in Iraq and deflect the political fallout from this growing debacle.
Yeah, deflect the political fallout. Well, for example, Henry Waxman now is calling on Attorney General John Ashcroft to reveal who cleared members of Osama bin Laden's family. This is new. I mean, this is new and it's old, right? I mean, we all remember the story about how when 9/11 was shut down, everything was shut down for 9/11, there was one airplane flying around picking up members of the bin Laden family and getting them out of the country. And finally, Congress has got it. Congressman, California Democrat Henry Waxman, this from an article by Klaus Mayer in The Hill, which is the newspaper everybody reads on Capitol Hill, is calling on Attorney General John Ashcroft to reveal who cleared members of Osama bin Laden's family and other Saudi citizens to leave the country immediately following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. If such investigation did not occur, the public deserves to know why, Waxman said. And why did we smuggle the bin Laden family out Before we even knew that for sure that Osama bin Laden had anything to do with this. I mean, this is very strange stuff. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Oh. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and four pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped five sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back.
Talk, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. This is Tom Hartman. Yeah, the White House said Saturday, this from the Star Tribune, the Washington Post, actually an article by Dan Egan in the Washington Post. The White House said Saturday that President Bush plans to meet with only a limited number of representatives from the commission investigating the 9/11 attacks. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to keep the investigation straight, right? I mean, here we've got this investigation into the WMD stuff. Well, that's not going to come out until after the election, and the guy that he put in charge of it is refusing to talk about his relationship with the Republicans, and we'll get into that in a little bit. And now on the 9/11 panel, the president had said, oh, sure, I'll talk to them, and now we discover... No, he's not going to talk to them. He's going to have a private meeting with maybe one or two of them, perhaps, like maybe Thomas Keene, the Republican and chairman, or some other good buddy of his. But he apparently is not going to allow them to sit there and ask him questions. This is... after Pearl Harbor, the first thing Roosevelt did was said, find out what happened. I mean, it's if George Bush isn't trying to hide anything, why is he acting like it? I mean, you would just think from a political point of view, just political common sense, he would want to at least behave like he has nothing to hide, if he has nothing to hide. And if he's got something to hide... Well, then I guess stonewalling like this is the way to do it, and just hope the people don't notice. You know, I think, yeah, of course, we all know one of the things he has to hide is that a month before 9/11, he was told that Al-Qaeda was planning on hijacking airplanes, and they had targets in New York City and Washington, D.C., and what did he do? He told Ashcroft about it, obviously, because Ashcroft immediately, the day afterward, stopped flying on commercial airplanes, and George Bush immediately... left town. He went to Texas for the longest vacation in the history of the presidency, in the 227-year history of the American presidency. And then when that was over, he still didn't want to go back to Washington. He went to Florida. And he's sitting in a classroom when it happened. Anyhow, 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom. Happy President's Day, if that's applicable.
Thank you.
Yeah. One of the justifications for war that is being trotted out lately, again and again by the administration, from the top down, Bush, Rumsfeld, all of them, is this sort of lame, well, Bill Clinton and Madeleine Albright and the French and the Germans and the whole world thought that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, which, you know, I guess somehow exonerates Bush, but it neatly sidesteps the fact that none of those people, previous to Bush, invaded and occupied Iraq, you know,
right,
at the cost of hundreds of American
it's what the guy from the Carnegie Endowment said. He said,
yeah,
we thought they had a few weapons, you know, maybe enough to throw across the border at Iran if there was another war with Iran, but we didn't think that it was a threat to us or anybody else.
You know, and I pointed out again and again before the war began, when I had my own little radio show in Santa Fe, over and over, the fact that the Shia Muslims in Iraq had quite a majority, coupled with the fact that the one thing the Bush administration could not let happen was another Muslim theocracy in the Middle East, a la Iran, gave lie to the fact that we were going to, move in a democracy somehow, one person, one vote. It just simply could not happen.
It's not going to happen. But all we are going to do is we're going to move in Halliburton and a whole bunch of oil rigs.
Yes, with no bid contract.
There you go.
Take care.
Chris, thanks for the call. Well said. I mean, this is the Halliburton scandals just keep on rolling, by the way. A great list of them today on the Center for American Progress website. Just remarkable. Nathan and Marilyn, stick around. I'll take your call after the break. This is Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour. This is the radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Weather-related disasters are a growing drain on the global economy. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last year, floods, windstorms, heat waves, and other natural disasters caused $60 billion worth of damage around the world. Researchers who study weather-related disasters say the price tag has risen sharply in recent decades, and the trend is likely to continue. Thomas Loster works for the Munich Reinsurance Company in Germany, and he heads a UN commission that studies the costs of climate change and related disasters. Loster says the most expensive weather-related damage last year occurred in Europe, where a severe heat wave wilted crops and killed more than 20,000 people. In addition, China suffered heavy flooding, and the United States was hit hard by tornadoes in the Midwest. Loster says 2003 was one of the worst years in history in terms of weather-related damage. He says that rising expense is part of a long-term trend.
If we look at weather-related losses on the long run, comparing decades, we find tremendous increases in losses.
Loster says the economic costs of natural disasters were six times greater in the 1990s than they were in the 1960s. Loster says one reason for the increase in damage has to do with the weather itself. He says some extreme weather events, like the so-called 100-year floods and storms, are growing more frequent.
Every person can read that there is a 100-year event around the corner, and this tells us that they are no longer 100-year events, but the period has shortened.
Loster says the main reason for the increase in weather-related damage has to do with people. More and more people now live in disaster-prone places, and that means there's more high-value property that's now at risk. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Tick-tick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals Whale. And what your animals do to you. Seal. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer we'll all your animal Jack. Questions Zebra. From A to Z. Iguana. Sunday nights Cuda on mundi. IE America Minx. Radio narwhal. Network.
Ostrich. Right,
penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Friend speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont. This is Tom Hartman. Nathan in Maryland is on the line. Hey, Nathan, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks again for having me, Tom. I want to lay out a hypothesis about how we might have been able to handle the Iraq problem differently. I'm going to make one or two assertions, but and they may be challengeable, but I'll try and complete the construct before. Now, the first assertion that I'm going to make is that a dictator like Saddam Hussein maintains power primarily through two functions: his ability to allocate resources to people who obey him, and the threat of violence against those who do not.
Sure.
Right. So we have said
not,
that...
Not unlike, threatening Joe Wilson's wife.
Right, not unlike that at all. But we have said that we did everything that we could to get Saddam Hussein to comply.
Or to
free Iraq by using non-military practice. Now, the issue that I have is if you can make that assertion that Saddam Hussein controlled people through those mechanisms, you could also say, how do you weaken those mechanisms? Well, the best way, in my opinion, and again, this may be challengeable, is to corrupt the people at the lower end of his violence arm, and say local cops, sergeants, people on the beat who are keeping the populace in line.
The problem we had, Nathan, was that we didn't have good resources on the ground. We didn't even have good intel on the ground. But there's a lot that we could have done with regard to the international financial system.
That's what I wanted to talk about.
That's the big one. That's where we could have nailed him.
The capability maybe to set up underground economies where people who are not in a position of power because their resources have not been allocated to them can accrue resources and corrupt the existing power structure through black marketeering and underground economies. And these are creative ways that we could have brought down the machine.
Without starving thousands
of people, without killing anybody,
One of the problems, though, Nathan, is that we don't have now and we didn't have then an alternative. I mean, he was our strong... we put him into power because we recognized that that was an area that really should have been three separate nations, and unless you wanted to have a civil war continuously, and we put him into power in part to keep that area stable.
Well, yeah, but at the very least, we could have moderated his control through these sorts of levers.
Yeah,
and the really scary thing is the surprising lack of creativity in the upper ranks of our national security planning. Yeah. It's like these people, their best idea was to level sanctions against Iraq and then invade. These are people who are well-educated, presumably thoughtful people who are creating our national security specifications, and they lack such a fundamental level of creativity. It's like they're all Cracker Jacks cutouts.
I know, it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic.
It is tragic.
And it's one of the reasons why it's so important that we get politically active and that we change the administration in November. It's absolutely critical. Nathan, thanks for the call and for sharing your thoughts with us. I appreciate it. And, well said. Absolutely well said. In fact, there is just so much we could have done that we didn't do. Anyhow, our conservative alert for the day. The Big Bang was busted in Georgia. When scientists learned last month that the word evolution had been removed from Georgia's proposed science curriculum for middle and high school students, some wondered what else might have been deleted. Some fear, this is from the Atlanta Constitution Journal, an article by Laura Diamond, some feared that the Big Bang theory itself, the dominant scientific theory about the origins of the universe, would be absent. Their fears were well-founded. The Big Bang has been eliminated from the science curriculum, along with lessons on plate tectonics, which have been scaled back. Concepts like the Big Bang, evolution, and plate tectonics can be controversial in some circles because they offer scientific explanations of how the world began that don't correspond with some religious beliefs that God created that 6,000 years ago, poof, it all came about. Sarah Pallas, associate professor of biology at Georgia State University, said the science portion of the proposed curriculum was, quote, definitely written to be acceptable to the biblical literalists. Any phrase that would accept a creationist is that would upset a creationist is gone. So, Also in the kind of, you know, strange events category, we'll see what comes out of this one. Ralph Nader put up a website in which he was asking people, do you think I should run? And his website was called NaderExplore04.com. In fact, it still is, NaderExplore04.com. And he had to start ignoring it or take it down or change it or something because RalphDon'tRun.net, a website created by John Pierce, a California Democrat, was feeding people over to Nader's website to beg him not to run. And so if you want an actual objective grassroots look, so this is from an article by John Tierney in the New York Times today. As of Saturday, Tierney writes, as of Saturday, there were more than 188,000 registered supporters for Howard Dean at meetup.com. You look at meetup.com, you see these meetups, you know, and you see the supporters, and this is a pretty good grassroots. You know, nobody's driving anything. It's not like a poll you can manipulate. It's not one of those things where you can sit there and click on it 35 times like the CNN poll or whatever, those online polls where they always had to put those caveats that, this is not scientific. As of Saturday, Howard Dean had 188,000 registered supporters, 45,000 for John Kerry, 23,000 for Dennis Kucinich, 9,000 for John Edwards, 233 for Al Sharpton. How many another story anyway. But how many did Ralph Nader have? 375. It looks like Ralph, I just can't imagine. I can't imagine him pulling this thing off. And have you heard what Bush is going to do about MTBE? This is an amazing story. I'll tell you about it right after we talk to Phil in Florida here. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Hey, Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to talk about dirty tricks. You know, we're 9 months away or X number of months away from the election, and it's always already started. And someone once said that a lie can get halfway around the world before the truth gets out of bed. And we've already found out that one of the photographs trying to tie Kerry and Fonda together was a phony.
Yeah, it was a phony. In fact, it was just released 2 months ago by the guy who took the picture to a service that sells pictures for photographers. And somebody had airbrushed Jane Fonda into the picture.
Yeah, they use Photoshop. You could put Ronald Reagan there in a tie-dye shirt,
right,
in an anti-war demonstration,
right,
with
a flying saucer behind him. Yeah.
So we've got that. And of course, that photograph went out, and very few people are going to find out it was a phony.
And Phil, I'm on some of the Republican lists. You know, I just kind of keep track of everything, and that photo is everywhere. I mean, every Republican in the country has gotten that thing in email.
The other thing is you got this story going on about Kerry and the girl who, quote, fled to Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that her fiancé and her moved to Israel and then subsequently moved to Kenya for his business.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different than fled to Kenya.
Yeah. You
see what I'm talking about?
Consider the source, Phil. I mean, we are witnessing how, particularly if you listen to right-wing talk radio, we are witnessing an absolute vicious smear campaign already underway.
Right, exactly.
That is just pathetic, atrocious, disgusting. I try to keep to the issues. I think we really should be electing people based on the issues. But that's not how the Republicans do it. I mean, they went after Bill Clinton over his sex life. They're going to try and do the same thing to John Kerry. They took out Gary Hart that way. Or you could say he took himself out. It's just tragic, and they go on these rants for like a half hour, an hour long. You know, it's just over and over and that beat this into the ground.
The thing is, you have one guy, let's say this Bortz, he'll take it, and then the next one for another 3 hours, he picks it up, and after his show is over, the next guy picks it up. So it goes on for 8, 10, 12 hours a day.
Oh, it goes on for 24 hours a day. it's the great right-wing echo chamber.
Exactly.
And they're all working from the same talking points that they get from the Heritage Foundation or from former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie's RNC.
Also, Grover Norquist.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's the kicker is this. I think this tactic, if anything could defeat Kerry, this is the kind of tactic that could do it.
You mean tying him to an intern, tying him
to
Jane Fonda?
They'll make up drugs are next.
Yeah.
They'll find out someone who they'll get someone to say that you know that he you know sold him a pound of Jamaican gold or something like that. And in other words, they're not going to give up. You know, they're going to throw as much stuff against the wall and see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Bush will always say, "I didn't have anything to do with it. I didn't know anything about it."
Yeah, yeah.
But his surrogates.
Well, Phil, on the one hand, I am disgusted by it. On the other hand, in the election of 1800, right, the third presidential election in the history of the United States, the first wasn't really so much of an election as a selection. You know, George Washington
right.
Everybody just said, hey, we want you to be president, and he said, okay. But, you know, John Adams versus Thomas Jefferson, and they were out there talking about Sally. They called her Dusky Sally. Sally Hemings, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And, trying to go after Jefferson. Turns out there was some truth to it, apparently. But character assassination in a political campaign is nothing new, is not going to go away. And our job as American citizens is to see past it and keep our eye on the issues. That's the bottom line.
And is a struggle.
Oh, it's
most
people. Yeah, well, it's a struggle for most news reporters. I'll tell you that, for the news organizations, because if it's a tabloid headline, they love it. I mean, that's what they want.
Right.
Yeah. So
and basically, you not only have the surrogates on the radio pushing this, but then you've got Drudge, whose agenda and goal is to get Bush reelected.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty amazing, you know. And he claims all these hits on his website. By the way, I thought it was interesting. Google has this little toolbar, and it has a page rank on it, and it actually tells you how many people are looking at at a website over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the commondreams.org website has about the same page rank looking at that as does the Drudge Report. I'm wondering where his numbers are coming from, although, you know, maybe they're legitimate. Well, maybe Common Dreams is just that huge. Anyhow, Phil,
I would like to ask Drudge how many people would be signing on to it if they had to pay every time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we won't go there. The Bush administration, and thanks for the call, Phil. I appreciate it. It's always nice to hear from you. The Bush administration quickly shelved a proposal to ban a gasoline additive that contaminates drinking water in many communities. Did you hear about this, by the way? Odds are you didn't. This is one of those little, let's do it on a Saturday afternoon and hope, or a Friday afternoon and hope nobody notices. The Bush administration, this is from the Associated Press. The Bush administration quietly shelved a proposal to ban a gasoline additive that contaminates drinking water in many communities, helping an industry that has donated millions to Republicans. Now, in Congress, this thing has been bogged down over a proposal to shield the industry from lawsuits. This being put forth by former bug spray applicator Tom DeLay, and now House Majority Leader, Republican of Texas, former exterminator. I guess if you spend a lot of your life inhaling bug spray, you don't think chemicals are all that dangerous. Or maybe that accounts for why he's so strange. But in any case, you got Tom DeLay promoting a law that says that you can't sue the companies that make this stuff if you happen to be a town whose water is ruined by it. President Clinton, the EPA, had intended to phase it out, and Bush rolled it back. In fact, here's the actual regulation that Clinton's EPA had sent to the White House on the last full day of office in January 2001. It said, and I quote, "The use of MTBE as an additive to gasoline presents an unacceptable risk to the environment," end quote. Right? Very straightforward. This stuff is dangerous. The EPA documents, this article by Pete Yost in the AP, how Bush reversed the effort to ban MTBE. The EPA document went on to say that low levels of MTBE can render drinking water supplies unpotable. That is, you can't drink the stuff. MTBE dissolves and spreads rapidly in the groundwater, resists biodegradation. It doesn't break down easily, in other words, and is more difficult and costly to remove. Three MTBE producers account for half of the nation's the additive's daily output. The three contributed to George W. Bush's presidential campaign, the Republican Party, and Republican congressional candidates in 1999 and 2000, twice what they gave to the Democrats. This is a classic case, says Frank O'Donnell of the Clean Air Trust, a classic case of the Bush administration helping its campaign contributor friends at the expense of public health. Just amazing. This is Tom Hartman, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
I'm Michael.
I'm Ellen.
And we're the Cooking Couple.
Join us every Sunday from noon to 2 Eastern Time right here for the Cooking Couple Show,
where we serve you food with attitude plus a heap and helping of humor. It's all about food, family, and fun.
So tune in every Sunday from noon to 2 for nutrition, fitness, innovative products, consumer tips, and entertainment options for the whole family.
It's the Cooking Couple Show. And when the Cooking Couple cook, we do it on all four burners.
It's food with attitude.
Chop suey, chow mein, young one, two for when you.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Doolittle, who talks to the animals. You don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday, from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Standard Time, on IE America Radio Network.
And they're coming to take me away.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Long as I remember, the rain been coming down. Clouds of mystery forest, confusion on the ground. Goodness through the ages, trying to find the sun. And I wonder, who'll stop the rain?
And welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative. This is Tom Hartman. Just to wrap that story up. One of the companies that makes MTBE, their spokesman, a guy by the name of Brown, says, nobody's talking about the trial lawyers' campaign contributions to their supporters in Congress, and it's the trial lawyers who are the force behind the unjustified lawsuits. See, the fact that communities get their water supplies contaminated, and so they have to hire a lawyer to sue the company, and so these companies are saying, it's all the trial lawyers' fault. Yeah, right. Like the trial lawyers dumped this stuff in the gas, you know, got this stuff in your water. So this, you know, this is the attack against trial lawyers consistently right across the board on the right is part of the cheap labor pro-corporate conservative agenda to prevent individual American citizens from having rights relative to the real power in this country, which is the multinational corporation. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, are you aware of the story that was in the Memphis Flyer?
I don't know.
It says Bush a no-show at Alabama base, and let me read you the first.
Oh, you're talking about here. the two guys who've come forward and said that they were in that unit and they kept waiting for him because they'd heard he was coming?
It says two members of the Air National Guard unit that President George W. Bush allegedly served with as a young guard flyer in 72. Had been told to expect him and were on the lookout for him. He never showed.
Yeah, yeah, I got
however,
that.
However, and that both Bob Mintz and Paul Bishop are certain.
Yeah, yeah, I've got that story actually in the stack here. I was going to get to it in the third hour of this program. But on the other hand, you know, you've got this guy that they're trotting out on the right-wing talk shows, and he's doing the circuit, and he's probably on faux news saying, oh, yeah, I remember him. He sat in my office and filled out paperwork back during that time. And who knows? Who knows? Armin, thanks for the call. It's 2 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky.
We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Blood-Sucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
About the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. Archbishop Desmond Tutu will challenge Tony Blair and George Bush today to apologize for their pursuit of a counterproductive and immoral war in Iraq. In a scathing analysis of the backdrop to the invasion, he will ridicule the dangerously flawed intelligence that Britain and the U.S. used to justify military action, which has made the world a great deal less safe. The intervention of the Nobel Peace Prize winner in the controversy over Iraq follows a series of deadly terrorist attacks in the country over the past week, including an armed raid on a police station on Saturday in which 22 people died. The electronic voting system designed for the forthcoming American election is fundamentally flawed and could undermine the trustworthiness of the entire U.S. democratic process, a scientist has told the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Paper ballots can be scrutinized to ensure they have not been misread or tampered with, but electronic votes recorded only as computer code cannot be checked to see the true intention of the voter, said David Dill, a professor of computer science at Stanford University in California. The system is in crisis. A quarter of the American public are voting on machines where there's very little protection of their votes. I don't think there's any reason to trust these machines, he said. Generous constitutional freedoms, weak law enforcement, and lightly patrolled borders have made Canada an inviting place for dangerous extremists or terrorists to set up shop, says a new report by the Library of Congress in Washington. The report, titled Nations Hospitable to Organized Crime and Terrorism, was completed in October by the Congressional Library's Federal Research Division under an arrangement with the Central Intelligence Crime and Narcotics Center. The report notes the recent cooperation between Canadian and U.S. officials in fighting terrorism. It also acknowledges Canadian steps to toughen anti-terrorism and immigration laws, but cast doubt on whether they go far enough, saying Canada's liberal democratic identity may limit adoption of sterner measures. More after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Looking cheerful and dressed in a dark gray business suit with a salmon-colored tie instead of his trademark uniform, Cuban leader Fidel Castro used humor to defend himself from U.S. hostility, ridiculing George W. Bush for his gaffes. Bush could not debate a Cuban ninth grader who knows more than he does, Castro said in a speech to an audience of 1,400 economists who were in stitches when he read some of Bush's more insipid statements. Castro quoted Bush as saying, "I will have a foreign-handed foreign policy. I know how hard it is for you to put food on your family. More and more of our imports come from overseas, and the most important job is not to be governor or first lady in my case." For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, what is it?
I realize I love you, but as long as you're with Jessica, there can never be anything between us.
Cass, there's no need to cry. Besides, I've got really great news.
You're leaving Jessica?
No. I just saved a load of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. I saved. I thought that meant something to you.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you've got an old wreck of a car with a busted engine, you can put the shiniest coat of paint that there is on it, but that old wreck still won't take you anywhere. This reality seems to have escaped the Bushites, who keep slapping shiny new paint on their old wreck of an economic policy. The latest comes in response to the growing crisis of job losses in American manufacturing. In George W.'s 3-year tenure, nearly 3 million manufacturing jobs have been lost. These are usually the best-paying jobs in town, and when they go, so do local businesses that count on those workers to be customers, and soon the town's whole middle-class future dries up. This year, even though stock prices, corporate profits, and CEO pay are on the rise, American factories continue to shed jobs, and the wages of most workers are either stagnant or falling. So the Bushites painting crew has rushed right out with a bright new color they call a comprehensive strategy to address the challenges to U.S. manufacturers. It offers nothing but the same old corporate giveaways that this crew always put forward. More tax breaks, less environmental protections, more nuclear power, and more limits on the ability of consumers and workers to sue corporations for wrongdoing. To add sparkle to this coat of paint, the Bushites also call for a new President's Manufacturing Council to, get this, give corporate leaders more say in government. More say? These guys already own the White House, most of Congress, and the judiciary. They need more say like Rush Limbaugh needs another dose of painkillers. The Bushites' latest paint job was revealed at a media event staged in an Ohio factory. But even as Commerce Secretary Don Evans was laying it on thick, executives at a factory in neighboring Michigan were saying adios to their 2,700 workers, notifying them that their factory was being moved to Mexico. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get America moving, we don't need new paint. We need a new engine.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have metal will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back, friends. What can be done to reverse the damage of the conservative agenda? I mean, they're at it again. Senate Republicans, this is from BushGreenWatch.com. Senate Republicans this week are trying to revive the energy bill, which failed to pass before. This thing was so loaded with pork and so destructive to the United States of America that even though the Republicans control the House and Senate, they couldn't get it passed. And they're going to, this is the one that was, that Dick Cheney and Ken Lay and their other buddies all got together and put together and in secret. And, you know, he's being sued over right now. This was back in 2001, before 9/11, where as part of their secret deliberations, we now know, they were carving up the oil fields of Iraq and naming companies that are potential customers for Iraqi oil. Now, why would they be doing that in April of 2001, before 9/11? Well, that's something a lot of people are wondering, including the right-wing guy, Larry Klayman, who pursued, you know, his lawsuit on behalf of Jennifer Flowers, who's what nearly brought down Bill Clinton. And he's now suing Dick Cheney, saying, you know, what were you doing? This secret thing. Well, they're trying to bring it out again. They are trying to bring it out again. They're going to roll it out. Billions of dollars of corporate welfare. There is more money in welfare. Let me give you some money for doing nothing type of welfare. If you want to define welfare, is giving people money for doing nothing. There is more welfare in this bill, you know, for sitting on oil wells. There's more welfare in this bill than there than all the welfare paid to human beings in the United States. Senate Republicans are this week are trying to revive the energy bill, which failed to pass before Christmas by removing some of the most controversial tax breaks and subsidies for industry. But the bill, based on the National Energy Plan drafted in secret by the Cheney Energy Task Force, is still loaded with provisions harmful to the environment and public health. Now, our question: what can be done to reverse the damage of the conservative agenda? Let me just say, if we were to, let me back up a little bit from that. We are losing jobs in America. Our manufacturing jobs are going overseas. And there are remedies. There are ways to fix that. For, you know, and we've talked about them on this program many times. And our IT jobs are going overseas. Basically, you have to have a nation's wealth, the standard of living, when you kind of divide all the wealth that's floating around by the number of people, if you have a society with any kind of reasonable middle class in it, some reasonable distribution of wealth within the country, not redistribution by the government, but just, you know, a system that allows for wealth. When you look at the wealth of a nation, it's the function of a couple very straightforward things. It's a function of what you have, that is, your natural resources. In the case of the United States, how much oil we have under the ground, how much gold we have, how much nickel we have, how much copper we have. You know, the Kennecott copper mine is one of the few things you can actually see from outer space. Huge copper mine. A little bit of trivia there. Anyway, your natural assets. This is one of the reasons why the 15th century was referred to by some as the Spanish, or the 1500s, the 16th century was referred to as the Spanish century, Spanish and Portuguese, because they looted all the gold from South and Central America and suddenly became incredibly wealthy. So anyhow, you've got the wealth represented by your natural resources. And then you add to that the wealth that is created by turning something that has little value into something that has more value. So you take some iron ore and you smelt it into iron or steel and you make it into a horseshoe, and now it has more value than it did as a rock, as a stone, and as a piece of a stone. And then if you take that horseshoe and you put it on a horse and the horse does something productive, you've added even more value. To use kind of old-fashioned Adam Smith-style examples, but you get what I'm saying here. And there's really two things that are going into the equation there in converting that iron ore into the good of the product of the horseshoe and the service of whatever it is, you know, the horse is doing. Say he's the Pony Express or something, to keep this very clear, very simple. There's two kinds of transformation that are happening, or two things are being brought to the table to increase value. One is the actual physical labor that is being done. In other words, you have a blacksmith making that, you've got somebody going out and selling the horseshoes, you've got somebody putting them on the horses, you've got somebody using the horses, you've got physical labor associated with all that. That's one. So we're up to two forms of wealth now: the raw material, the iron ore, and the physical labor that goes into changing the iron ore, causing it to become more valuable, and that throws off income, that throws off wealth to the person who's doing the conversion. That's number two. And the third form of the wealth of nations, to borrow a phrase from Adam Smith, is called intellectual capital. And that is, somebody had the idea that if we add a little bit of nickel to that iron, and if we add a little bit a couple of different minerals, and if we heat it up to a certain temperature, that we can turn it from a rock into iron ore, and we can turn it from iron into steel, and we can, you know, in other words, there was the thought that here's a new way to make that horse more productive. So there's what's called intellectual capital. And money is merely a means of exchange so that these three forms of real capital, these are the real wealth, the raw materials that you have, the things and services that you make from them, and the ideas that enable improvements to come along. Money is just the means of exchange that you use so that people can trade in these things. So money doesn't really represent wealth for a nation. I mean, just ask the Germans in 1926 when it took a wheelbarrow full of 1,000-mark notes, $1,000 notes, to buy a loaf of bread. Money reflects the value that's going on in the economy. So we have a situation now where our natural resources are being depleted at a very rapid rate. Our oil wells, the oil in the United States is down to the point where we have to import more than half of the oil we consume. I mean, back in the 19th century, just 100, 110 years ago, Standard Oil of New Jersey, Standard Oil of New York, Pennsylvania Oil Company, what's now Pennzoil, there were oil wells just all over the place. In New York, New Jersey, Northern Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Southern Michigan. Where are those oil wells? Well, they're still there, but they're empty. Or they're down to the point where you have to suck so hard on the straw to get the oil out of them that you'd have to run a pump to create the vacuum. You'd have to use a gallon and a half of oil to suck out 1 gallon. In other words, they're not profitable. Or you'd have to, if oil went up to $50 a barrel or $60 a barrel, then they may open them back up and take the last little bit out. But basically, there's nothing left there. Our oil wells in California, Oklahoma, Texas, our production costs for oil now in the United States are averaging around $14 to $15 a barrel, and you can only sell it for about $30. So American oil, because we're running low on it. The first oil well in the United States drilled by Colonel Drake in Titusville, Pennsylvania in 1867, and since that time, the world has consumed about 1 trillion barrels of oil. And the best guess is there's about 1 trillion barrels left, between 800 billion barrels and 1 trillion barrels left, all over the planet. And we've consumed well over half of the oil that was in North America, in the United States, that part of North America that is the United States. So our oil wealth is diminishing. Our mineral wealth is diminishing. And what's really ironic is that we have these laws that go back to the 19th century, during the time when the House and Senate were just incredibly corrupt, some of them were the result of corruption, some of them were part of the attempt to open the West to expansion, where they basically said, if you discover minerals on a piece of land that's owned by the federal government, you can have those minerals for free, or you can have them super cheap. And those laws are still on the books. And so you've got, for example, one of the largest mining companies in the world is a Canadian mining company. And this deal goes back to the Nixon administration, but they've got really good under the Reagan administration. And they came in and they bought mineral rights. I'll have to dig out the actual dollar figures, but it was something on the order of a few dollars an acre. I mean, literally, like $1, $2, $3, $5, something like that, very cheap. And underneath each one of those acres, there was millions of dollars worth of gold. And they're digging that stuff out and shipping it around the world. So we are using up our natural resource wealth, and we are giving it away to large multinational corporations and American corporations as well. But ironically, some of the largest corporations taking our mineral wealth out of the United States are not even American corporations. So that wealth is vanishing. The wealth of the ability of people to use their hands, their labor, to make things, to improve things, that's all moving to China. That wealth is diminishing. And now we find that while the United States is graduating between 3 and 5% of our college graduates are engineers, in India it's 20%. In China it's pushing 22%. Our intellectual wealth is diminishing. And what are we doing about all of this? Absolutely nothing. The Bush administration is presiding over the destruction of the wealth of this nation. And they're doing nothing about it. In fact, they just issued a report saying it's a good thing. It is a good thing for multinational corporations and extremely wealthy individuals who are skimming this stuff off the top. But the reason I started with this Bush Greenwatch, I want to get back to this. There is something that we can do that will solve this problem, at least in part. I'll tell you about that right after this break. This is Tom Hartman. Talk radio for the rest of us. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more music, but first a look at weather. Here's meteorologist Tom Sparks.
Thanks, Chad. There's a front moving in from the south, which is going to mix with warm air, giving us the distinct possibility for showers over the next few days. In fact, some of them are going to be big soakers, let me tell you. However, if you're planning any outdoor activities for the weekend, I have good news.
So it's going to be clear?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
I can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Your right to vote. It's something that most Americans take for granted. But today, serious questions are being asked about how we vote. Machines are used to process 98% of the votes in U.S. elections, and that includes absentee ballots. How do we know if our votes are being counted correctly? Experts say we don't know, that machines conceal the voting process, that whoever controls the machines controls the election. What is the government doing to protect your right to vote? There is no federal agency that regulates or monitors the voting machine industry. There are no restrictions on who can make, sell, or service voting equipment. They don't even have to be U.S. citizens. And there are no mandatory federal standards for voting equipment. Even if there were, experts say that voting machines can be easily rigged and impossible to safeguard. I'm Lynn Landis. I'm an investigative journalist. Learn more about this issue at my website, ecotalk.org. That's ecotalk.org.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Once I lived a life of a millionaire, spending my money I didn't care. I carried my friends out for a good time, buying bootleg liquor, champagne and wine. To fall so low, I didn't have a friend and no place to go. So if I ever get my hand on a dollar again, I'm gonna hold on to it till them eagles grin.
Yeah, that's a good plan. Hold on to your dollars, folks, because America is, we are rapidly becoming a third world country in the hands of the conservatives, and it's just fine with them. You get more and more, you know, wipe out the middle class, raise the number of people who are the working poor or double income families, just trying to stay where they were. And you have a citizenry that is less engaged in politics and more easily manipulated, and then you combine that with the setting aside enforcement of things like the Sherman Antitrust Act, so corporations can get larger and larger and larger to the point where they can control your health care, they can control your drugs, they can control what you hear, read, see on television, newspapers, radio stations, radio, and so on. The conservative agenda, in a nutshell, boils down to feudalism and aristocracy, cheap labor and extreme wealth at the top. So anyhow, as I was saying, we have had in the United States, we have had a number of bursts where wealth was created. Extraordinary times. The computer revolution is the one that's most recently remembered. We developed, between the internet and computer technology. Yes, it happened all over the world. A lot of it happened here, and as it was happening here, it was creating jobs. It was creating wealth. We were converting stuff into stuff that had more value, so, and adding labor and getting paid for that labor, and using intellectual capital, using ideas. Before that, Henry Ford did this thing with the automotive industry, another big boom for the United States. The main thing that drove the Roaring Twenties wasn't actually the auto industry, it was radio. It was the development of radio. In fact, the first consumer financing was created by RCA Corporation in the 1920s so that people could buy radios. And most suggest that RCA went up in the 1920s. Their stock went up in a way that was very, and along with the stock of a whole bunch of other broadcasting corporations that are now defunct, went up the same way that the tech stocks went up in the 1990s, and then the bubble burst in 1929. But radio, a new technology, built wealth. Automobiles built wealth. You go back to the 1870s, 1860s, the railroads built wealth in the United States. They connected us. We had the mills on the East Coast. We're then able to sell things on the West Coast. We became an exporting powerhouse. You go back before the Civil War, we were creating wealth largely by converting natural resources, our lands, our natural lands, into farmland. And people were generating wealth. And so there's, you see this equation played out over and over and over again. And for those of you who have studied David Ricardo and his theory of comparative advantage and Adam Smith, I forgive the redundancy, but what I'm suggesting is that if we were to have a massive program in the United States, not just to develop alternative energy, but to develop community-based energy systems, so that every square block or every neighborhood created all the energy that they themselves consumed, that we would have a revolution, we would have an economic boom time in the United States that would make the radio revolution of the 20s, the automotive revolution of the 30s and 40s, the post-World War II boom, the computer look like nothing. And it would strengthen the infrastructure of America, and it would save our ecology. All of these things, very straightforward, it could be done, and it's not rocket science. Some of it might involve rocket science, but it is possible. It can be done. This is Tom Hartman. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Weather-related disasters are a growing drain on the global economy. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last year, floods, windstorms, heat waves, and other natural disasters caused $60 billion worth of damage around the world. Researchers who study weather-related disasters say the price tag has risen sharply in recent decades, and the trend is likely to continue. Thomas Loster works for the Munich Reinsurance Company in Germany, and he heads a UN commission that studies the costs of climate change and related disasters. Loster says the most expensive weather-related damage last year occurred in Europe, where a severe heat wave wilted crops and killed more than 20,000 people. In addition, China suffered heavy flooding, and the United States was hit hard by tornadoes in the Midwest. Loster says 2003 was one of the worst years in history in terms of weather-related damage. He says that rising expense is part of a long-term trend.
If we look at weather-related losses on the long run, comparing decades, we find tremendous increases in losses.
Loster says the economic costs of natural disasters were six times greater in the 1990s than they were in the 1960s. Loster says one reason for the increase in damage has to do with the weather itself. He says some extreme weather events, like the so-called 100-year floods and storms, are growing more frequent.
Every person can read that there is a 100-year event around the corner, and this tells us that they are no longer 100-year events, but the period has shortened.
Loster says the main reason for the increase in weather-related damage has to do with people. More and more people now live in disaster-prone places, and that means there's more high-value property that's now at risk. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman, Talk Radio for the rest of us. The current here, they're gonna trot this energy bill out again. The current energy bill would, this from Bush Green Watch, threaten drinking water sources by exempting from Safe Drinking Water Act regulation the underground injection of chemicals during oil and gas development. A technology, by the way, developed and patented by Halliburton. It would exempt all oil and gas construction activities, including roads, drill pads, pipeline corridors, and refineries, from having to obtain a permit controlling polluted stormwater runoff caused by construction activities, as is currently required under the Clean Water Act. It would allow more smog pollution for longer than the Clean Air Act authorizes. It would dramatically increase air pollution and global warming with huge new incentives for burning coal, oil, and gas. And it would repeal the Public Utility Holding Company Act, the main law that protects consumers from market manipulation, fraud, and abuse in the electricity sector, remember California, even while evidence of corrupt industry behavior is front-page news and ratepayers are owed billions to compensate for the industry's illegal activities. Now, this is the cleaned-up energy bill that I'm telling you about. And I just offered a suggestion, an alternative. What are your thoughts on this? 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. John in Las Vegas is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. I want to ask you about the so-called jobless recovery and how it interfaces with the... I'm losing my train of thought a little bit. I haven't been on your show before.
Okay.
But here's what I don't get. You know, I mean, I understand that... I follow you as far as where you say that the Republicans or the conservatives don't care about the joblessness of the recovery as long as the GDP and the Dow and the leading economic, you know, the market indicators continue to go up, because all they care about is the top echelons of the people who, like, who, as you put it, you know, earn their income from dividends and investments. But I mean, you know, I earn my income largely from dividends and investments, but it's a middle class income. Mm-hmm. You know, I just happen to have invested in mutual funds, and a lot of people have. So, how does that? Do you think that's why that's what the Republicans are banking on? That there's more people than ever are to some extent in the market somehow in the form of mutual funds through pensions or 401ks or through trading online or what have you, there's a more widespread notion than ever before that if the Dow is okay, we're okay, even if there aren't jobs.
And in part, and in part, there's this mythos of America that, you know, you two can grow up to be president used to be the thing. In fact, right up until the 1970s.
Right, now you two can grow up to be Donald Trump.
That's right. Up until the 1970s, kids consistently defined their heroes as political figures, Abe Lincoln, George Washington. Starting in the 1980s, they started defining their heroes, the person that they wanted to grow up to be, as wealthy. And in part, that is because the wealthy have celebrated themselves, as they haven't since the 1920s. And in part, it's because people are feeling less and less secure, and wealth is a form of security. And security, you know, it's the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you don't have security, nothing else matters. You're not gonna be happy. You're not gonna have decent relationships. Your health is gonna be if without security, that's the foundation upon which everything rests. So I think that there is.
I mean, are they trying to cast a future for us as like the shareholder nation that all of us somehow?
Sure.
Have a dib in the have a finger in the Dow, and even if we don't produce any wealth here, you know, all the manufacturing is done overseas in China and India and whatever, that the voters here will be on board with their plan because everybody wants to see their mutuals go up.
Well, the Republicans have already rolled out the phrase shareholder nation. And yes,
right.
And that's part of it. And there are people who get their money by dividends, but it's
you can see that they're not all fat cats, right? I mean,
oh, of course
I mean, I think
not.
A lot of people who aren't fat cats.
Of course not. Yeah,
and I
would say that when you were interpreting my comments, you were just a little bit off. I'm not saying that they don't care about working people. And
the cons?
Yeah, the conservatives, and that the whole plan is just to enhance the rich. They believe, and they really do believe. I mean, you go back and you read conservative thought. Read 1953, The Conservative Mind, Russell Kirk's book, which was the 20th century modern classic. Or go back and you know, I mean, you go all the way back to Edmund Burke, if you want, in the 1700s. And they really believe that for a society to be stable, to be truly stable, and they want a stable America just as much as you and I do, that you have to have classes that are relatively immobile, that mobility within classes is beyond a certain threshold is a dangerous thing. So there's this notion that we want to maintain a wealthy class, a high class, you know, with its own private school system, its own private jet system, its own, you know, transportation, don't have to deal with the riffraff. And they actually believe that that's healthy ultimately for the United States. And there are those of us who are small D Democrats who believe the opposite. I mean, you know, this is the debate that Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson were having. It's a debate that has been going on in the United States for over 200 years and probably will go on for a long, long time all over the place. But, you know, Alan Greenspan is on the record as saying that there must be a certain threshold of unemployment to produce enough worker insecurity that workers will not be motivated to unionize and to seek what he calls wage inflation, increases in wages. You know, so they do care about the working class in as much as they want to keep people working, and they, you know, they don't want popular uprisings. Everybody remembers what happened to Louis, what, the 14th and Marie Antoinette, or was it the 17th? I forget my Louis, but anyhow, you know, the French. Nobody wants revolution. Nobody wants the poor to be rising up, I think, among the elite. But at the same time, it's to the benefit to have people scared to death for their jobs. And the Fed sees that as part of their job. So yeah, I think John, that they are rolling out this notion of a stockholder nation. You're going to be hearing more and more about it, particularly as they're trying to take the wealth, the trillions of dollars of wealth of Social Security, several hundred billion of which, by the way, they have been spending for the last 3 years to keep down the budget deficit figures. Our deficits are actually larger than they appear because they're taking money from the Social Security Trust Fund, which is not a separate fund. It's part of the general fund, unfortunately. That's what Al Gore kept talking about with the lockbox thing. And they're spending that money and diminishing. I mean, our real deficit is not $500 trillion. It's about $800 trillion. But in any case, you're going to see more and more talk about making America an investor nation, giving people an opportunity to invest their money as a slick way of getting out of Social Security, because these people really believe that you know, the conservative line that you have to have a serf class. You have to have a not just a worker class, but a terrified worker class if you're going to have social and political stability.
A point on it, because I know you got other callers, you got to move on. But so do you think then that's going to have to be like a really, really key part of the Democratic message to get the idea out there to make people understand that, you know, that the Dow and the Nasdaq and the S&P 500, that's not the whole story. And even if, you know, and we, you know, we recognize that it isn't just the fat cats who derive some of their income from dividends and interest, and even if you're a middle class person, you know, and you count on the stock market for some of your income, you've got to see that that's not the whole picture, just a rising stock market.
Yeah,
is not
there's two points
for America in the future.
There's two points. One, the rise in the stock market and that type of economic activity means a recovery for the rich and not for everybody else, or for those who are the investor class, as it were. And two, you're receiving money, you're receiving dividends presumably from your stock investments, or you sell things, you make long-term capital gains, you hold the stock for more than a year and a day. Why should the tax that you pay on the income that you get from having your money work for you be lower than the tax that the guy who lives next door to you pays from the income that he generates by having his you know, moving his arms, by using his muscle power to generate an income? Why?
Right. No, that's a really good question. I mean, maybe it's something for another call, but I do have some reservations about a system that incentivizes capital gain returns over dividend returns, but that's another discussion. Listen, I got to just thank you so much for like doing this listener's digest version of all of the economic canon that you do, because I'm just not a person who could get through Wealth of Nations and the.
Wealth of Nations is brutal. That is difficult reading.
So much to illuminate that for us. It's,
yeah, you're
it's
welcome,
a lot
John.
Of us who appreciate it.
You're welcome, John. Thanks. Yeah, Wealth of Nations. The hard, you know, get the Cliff Notes version because Adam Smith. I mean, well, it was the 1776. He published it, and nobody back then wrote in a way that people today can easily understand. With the surprising exception of Thomas Jefferson, I have a lot of letters from Jefferson in this book I've got coming out on July 4th. Because he was so articulate, and he actually could get to the point, which was nice. Something that I need to do more often, I'll do it right now. Kay in Santa Fe is on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Kay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. It is 15 minutes before the hour, and you are live and on the air.
Am I on?
You are on.
Okay, you said two important things. The word security, which is at the basis of everything, and that's why people are so terribly worried.
Yes.
And then you talked a few minutes ago about small units of energy. My husband and I once owned a small water system, and we concluded, and the Attorney General agreed with us, and I have seen this manifest in other water systems. The small water systems and energy systems that are owned by the users are the best run, the cheapest, and the most honest.
Absolutely. Well, and let me add one statistic to this, Kay. Somewhere between 15 and 70% of all electricity generated, depending on where you go in the United States, is lost in what's called line transmission losses.
Oh, tell me. I used to work for the Los Alamos Laboratory, and they have been working for 40 years on line loss.
Right.
I know
and,
all about that.
Yeah, so and for those folks who don't know what that is, it's when you've got a long high tension line, to push electricity through a wire, that wire, no matter how clean that copper is always going to have a little bit of resistance to that electricity, and so it converts that some small part of that electricity into heat, number one. And then also when electricity travels over a long distance, it also produces electromagnetic radiation, radio waves at a very low frequency because it's AC, it's alternating current. And so you've got energy radiating away from the lines as low frequency radio power, which is a loss of energy, and you've got energy being converted into heat. And when you've got 500, 1,000, 1,500 mile transmission lines, as you have rarely but occasionally, you can have 50, 60, 70% of that power gets lost in that transmission line. And you have smaller transmission lines that are just a few hundred miles, which are more typical. You still have line losses that range from 5 to 15% easily.
And the same is true of water. So what you're saying in a nutshell, and it's true, small is beautiful.
Yeah, it works.
It works all over the world, and it is also contradictory to capitalism because it would be user-owned. And when the users see their monthly bills and they have the equipment within driving range where they can share the responsibility of fixing the fences and the pumps and the pipes and the whatnot, they have a responsibility towards everyone else and towards the source of their water and energy.
Yeah.
And this is contradictory to capitalism, in which the profit motive is dominant.
Well, Kay, just to keep our terms clear, I would say actually this is entirely supportive of small-scale individual capitalism. It's contradictory to monopoly.
But nobody makes a profit on the small water systems and the small...
Well, you can if you're supplying a couple of neighbors.
Because any money that you generate, you have to put in reserve for maintenance and new equipment. I know this from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So the profit motive is practically non-existent.
Right,
and
but
that's what we need to aim for.
Yeah, but you're using capital. You're using the capital of the investment that you have and the money that you're using to produce energy, number one. And number two, if you have a couple of neighbors who wanted to buy it from you, you can actually generate a small profit. I mean, these things can be profitable. Many of them are. There's a big battle going on right here in Vermont about a guy who wants to put up four windmills because he's going to generate enough power to feed a town. And you got some people who are upset about the view that it's going to harm, and other people who are saying, hey, we, you know, get us off the grid. Won't this be wonderful? And, you know, it's a big debate. And these debates are starting to happen all over the country because this technology is now mature. It's really full. But I think that this actually can be a part of capitalism, and building these things as part of capitalism, selling them as part of capitalism. What it isn't is monopoly, and that's the problem we have. Monopoly. It's control of entire industries and large chunks of industries by companies that have a stranglehold on the situation. It's what brought California nearly to its knees.
Capitalistic motive is aimed at profit for a few. And that's not what you would have if you had small entities of energy and water.
Yeah, well said. Kay, thank you for the call. I appreciate your validation. Thanks for sharing that with us. It's 10 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman. You're in the real free speech zone. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday,
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring Fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what
a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
The Mike Molloy Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
you know, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Tom Hartman, and you're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations, my friends. 4 minutes before the hour, our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, all things Macintosh. If you use a Macintosh, if you need a Macintosh, if you want a Macintosh, if you need one fixed, if you need parts for it, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS for Small Dog Electronics, or smalldog.com, and be sure and tell them that you heard about them on the Tom Hartman program here on Z Radio. Okay, this is what happens when you let the commons be controlled by those whose first goal is not serving the public, but serving profit. And as I've said many times, it's fine to serve profit. I'm all in favor of companies going into business to make a living. I've done it myself many times over the course of my life. It's a fine thing. But there are some things like, for example, our drinking water or our sewage water that is part of the commons that you get the profit motive in there, and suddenly things start getting funky. And here we have this article from the Chicago Tribune today. The Bush administration wants to make it easier for cities to release partially treated sewage during heavy rains and snow melts, a policy shift that could boost levels of disease-causing pathogens in Lake Michigan and other waterways. Now, why would they do this? Because many cities now are privatizing they're bringing private corporations in to deal with their wastewater. And those private corporations are, well, here, I'll read you the article. Business interests are continuing to lobby for the practice, which they call sewage blending, end quote. It's more profitable to dump pathogens. Did you know that more than 1 million Americans a year get sick as a result of waterborne illness? In Chicago, this is an article from the Chicago Tribune, Chicago banned swimming at Lake Michigan beaches 130 times last year. There were 178 beach closings just in Lake County, one of the counties there. And here we have the EPA listening to industry, saying this thing. And in addition to that, federal funding for plant improvements and other clean water projects would be cut by nearly $500 million in Bush's proposed budget for 2005 to make room for more tax cuts for the rich. Amazing. This is Tom Hartman, the IE America Radio Network, the place where smart people get their news.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
No, I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles. Generous constitutional freedoms, weak law enforcement, and lightly patrolled borders have made Canada an inviting place for dangerous extremists or terrorists to set up shop, says a new report by the Library of Congress in Washington. The report, titled Nations Hospitable to Organized Crime and Terrorism, was completed in October by the Congressional Library's Federal Research Division under an arrangement with the Central Intelligence Crime and Narcotics Center. The report notes the recent cooperation between Canadian and U.S. officials in fighting terrorism. It also acknowledges Canadian steps to toughen anti-terrorism and immigration laws, but cast doubt on whether they go far enough, saying Canada's liberal democratic identity may limit adoption of sterner measures. Archbishop Desmond Tutu will challenge Tony Blair and George Bush today to apologize for their pursuit of a counterproductive and immoral war in Iraq. In a scathing analysis of the backdrop to the invasion, he will ridicule the dangerously flawed intelligence that Britain and the U.S. used to justify a military action which has made the world a great deal less safe. The intervention of the Nobel Peace Prize winner in the controversy over Iraq follows a series of deadly terrorist attacks in the country over the past week, including an armed raid on a police station on Saturday in which 22 people died. The electronic voting system designed for the forthcoming American election is fundamentally flawed and could undermine the trustworthiness of the entire U.S. democratic process, a scientist has told the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Paper ballots can be scrutinized to ensure they have not been misread or tampered with, but electronic votes recorded only as computer code cannot be checked to see the true intention of the voter, said David Dill, a professor of computer science at Stanford University in California. The system is in crisis. A quarter of the American public are voting on machines where there's very little protection of their votes. I don't think there's any reason to trust these machines, he said. More after this.
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's one in six people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
Looking cheerful and dressed in a dark gray business suit with a salmon-colored tie instead of his trademark uniform, Cuban leader Fidel Castro used humor to defend himself from U.S. hostility, ridiculing George W. Bush for his gaffes. Bush could not debate a Cuban ninth grader who knows more than he does, Castro said in a speech to an audience of 1,400 economists who were in stitches when he read some of Bush's more insipid statements. Castro quoted Bush as saying, "I will have a foreign-handed foreign policy. I know how hard it is for you to put food on your family. More and more of our imports come from overseas, and the most important job is not to be governor or first lady in my case." For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, Matthew.
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
If you've got an old wreck of a car with a busted engine, you can put the shiniest coat of paint that there is on it, but that old wreck still won't take you anywhere. This reality seems to have escaped the Bushites, who keep slapping shiny new paint on their old wreck of an economic policy. The latest comes in response to the growing crisis of job losses in American manufacturing. In George W.'s 3-year tenure, nearly 3 million manufacturing jobs have been lost. These are usually the best-paying jobs in town, and when they go, so do local businesses that count on those workers to be customers, and soon the town's whole middle-class future dries up. This year, even though stock prices, corporate profits, and CEO pay are on the rise, American factories continue to shed jobs, and the wages of most workers are either stagnant or falling. So the Bushites painting crew has rushed right out with a bright new color they call a comprehensive strategy to address the challenges to U.S. manufacturers. It offers nothing but the same old corporate giveaways that this crew always put forward. More tax breaks, less environmental protections, more nuclear power, and more limits on the ability of consumers and workers to sue corporations for wrongdoing. To add sparkle to this coat of paint, the Bushites also call for a new President's Manufacturing Council to, get this, give corporate leaders more say in government. More say? These guys already own the White House, most of Congress, and the judiciary. They need more say like Rush Limbaugh needs another dose of painkillers. The Bushites' latest paint job was revealed at a media event staged in an Ohio factory. But even as Commerce Secretary Don Evans was laying it on thick, executives at a factory in neighboring Michigan were saying adios to their 2,700 workers, notifying them that their factory was being moved to Mexico. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get America moving, we don't need new paint. We need a new engine.
The look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows when you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back, my friends. Happy President's Day. As George Washington said, our quote for the day is, mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow that all those who conduct themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. General and President George Washington. Well, Max Cleland has responded to Ann Coulter. You'll recall we talked about this in the program last week. Ann Coulter wrote this op-ed in townhall.com. I think William Buckley has something to do with running that site or owns it. And it was picked up on all the right-wing sites. The Heritage Foundation had it on their website, in which basically she said, we've got to stop calling Max Cleland a war hero. He wasn't really a war hero. He picked up a hand grenade and it blew up and blew off one of his arms and both his legs. And that doesn't make him a war hero. In fact, here's her exact quotes. If McClellan, well, here's the article from what is it, 11 Alive. This is Channel 11, the TV station in Georgia. Coulter, in a column published this week, said that Cleland, who lost both arms and a leg, both legs and an arm in Vietnam, is no war hero, but rather the victim of a tragic accidental grenade explosion who plays up his amputations for political gain. Quote, if Cleland had dropped a grenade on himself at Fort Dix rather than in Vietnam, he never would have been a U.S. senator in the first place. Maybe he'd be the best pharmacist in Atlanta, Coulter said in her column published on February 11. Did you get this? She says he dropped a grenade on himself. Coulter goes on to say, he didn't give his limbs for his country or leave them on the battlefield. There was no bravery involved in dropping a grenade on himself with no enemy troops in sight, end quote. The truth, however, is a little different. In fact, Cleland was wounded picking up a grenade that someone else dropped during a combat mission. And he says, and I quote, I volunteered for a combat mission with the 1st Air Cavalry Division going in to break the siege at Khe Sanh. And if that wasn't a combat mission, you ought to ask some of the people who were there and the 200 guys that were killed in that mission. Cleland goes on to say, Bush goes into Iraq and then 3 weeks in the battle stands on an aircraft carrier dressed up pretending to be a superhero, and the guy hardly showed up for drills in Alabama. He got favorable treatment in Vietnam. Well, after Ms. Coulter has done her little typical character assassination, you know, there is a threshold. I mean, there's a certain kind of, you know, media bottom feeder out there, I guess. And I don't mean that in the name calling way. I mean that in the there's certain folks who Ann Coulter, Michael Savage, who go out of their way to say outrageous things just to get the press to help build their careers. And it's unfortunate. I think, frankly, it hurts and embarrasses. I think Coulter hurts and embarrasses the conservative cause, as does Michael Savage. And I think in the process they hurt and damage America. Center for American Progress had written about this on Friday, February 13th. Last Friday the 13th, and after they published it, Fox News called them up, and they were all upset because they had quoted Ann Coulter correctly, but they cited her as a, quote, Fox News contributor, end quote. And the faux news folks were not appreciative of that. So here's the clarification that the Center for American Progress issued, and since I had read their release last Friday, this will be my clarification as well. Fox News said Ann Coulter, quote, is not a contributor to this network, end quote, and, quote, has not been a contributor for the last couple of years, end quote. Though Fox News's Sean Hannity described Ms. Coulter in December of 2002 as a Fox News contributor, and despite Coulter having appeared 50 times on Fox News since 2002, the Center for American Progress and the Tom Hartman Program regret any confusion that we may have caused you, thinking that Ann Coulter was a Fox News contributor. And it gets even stranger. Helen Thomas is the grand dame of, you know, she's been around for journalism forever. I mean, you know, she goes back to when Walter Cronkite was young, and I mean that in a respectful way. Helen Thomas is one of the sharpest, brightest, most articulate, most intelligent, most knowledgeable, most well-schooled journalists operating in America. And she has known every president going back to who knows when. I would guess, well, here it is. She's covered every president since Dwight Eisenhower. And little Scotty here, Scott McClellan, the new White House press secretary, lost it on Friday. Absolutely lost it. She said, Helen Thomas asked Scott if the reason that George Bush had been absent from duty in Alabama was because he was performing court-ordered community service in Texas because of a drug arrest. And, of course, there is that story, you know, Hatfield's book, Favorite Son, I think is the title of it, that documents this, that George Bush was busted for cocaine and had to do community service. And so Helen Thomas asks Scott, you know, could this be the case? She asked McClellan if that was accurate. This is from the Washingtonian, the Washington Buzz, Washingtonian.com. According to reporters in the press room, McClellan got red-faced and became so angry it looked as if he was ready to pounce on this little old lady. Thomas, who has covered every president since Dwight Eisenhower and now writes a column for Hearst, was not fazed. She said, I think they are getting pretty nervous about this. I've learned over the years that when you put out records, it often leads to more questions. Interesting. Very interesting. I got to say, I thought this was a one-day story. This thing came out in the 2000 election. Michael Moore did his thing, you know, Wesley Clark got asked about it. Peter Jennings brought it into the public light with the debates. And I figured it would die. But this thing has a life of its own. Now we've got two members of the the Air National Guard unit. This is the story that Armin had called earlier with. Here I've got the FedEx pilot Bob Mintz, backed up by a Carolina colleague, recalls no W at Donnelly Air Force Base in 72. Two members of the Air National Guard unit that President George W. Bush allegedly served with as a young guard flyer in 72 had been told to expect him and were on the lookout for him. He never showed, however. And both of these guys, Bob Mintz and Paul Bishop, are certain of this. Mintz, who is now 63, he flies for FedEx. He says, I remember that I heard someone was coming to drill with us from Texas, and it was implied that it was somebody with political influence. Bush's dad was a congressman at the time, which is how he got in the Guard. He says, I was a young bachelor then. I was looking for somebody to prowl around with. But, says Mintz, that somebody, better known to the world now as the President of the United States, never showed up at Donnelly in 72, nor in 73, nor at any time that Mintz, a FedEx pilot now and an Eastern Airlines pilot then, when he was a reserve first lieutenant at Donnelly, can remember. And the story goes on. So, is W in trouble over the wrong things, I think. I think what we need to be doing is exposing this guy's insane, insane economic and international trade policies and the corruption that echoes through just about every aspect of this administration. And I'm not saying that like mudslinging. I mean, this is just real stuff, that all of these decisions are being made to benefit the large corporate donors to the Bush campaign and to the Republican Party over and over, day after day after day. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, Caesar in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Caesar, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
How you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Oh, good. I was just, I think I might be mistaken, but I think Helen goes all the way down to Truman.
Well, that's what I thought, too, but the article that I was reading says Eisenhower, so either they got it wrong.
I'm pretty sure it was Truman, but that's okay. You know, one thing I was going to ask you, guys, people like Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, Michael Medved, they always make references to Thomas Jefferson that he was a religious man. And he was not a religious man. In fact, I read one letter that he sent to John Adams back in 1814 where he pretty much says that he thinks the Bible is pretty much hogwash, you know, except for a few, references here and there. But he just was not a religious man. And why do they keep doing that?
Well, not only Jefferson, they're trying to rewrite history. They're trying, basically, Jefferson was a spiritual man. He was a deist.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You're breaking up there, Caesar. Anyhow, Jefferson was a deist. He, along with George Washington and Ben Franklin, they were the most outspoken of the deists among the founders. Believed that there was a creator who created the creation and then just kind of stepped back and let things happen, and that there are natural laws that govern things. And this is one of the areas where Thomas Jefferson even split with John Locke, who was kind of the founder of liberal thinking and of one of the seminal thinkers that led to American democracy, John Locke's Second Treatise on Government, that, as I recall, was published in 1742. And Locke had this phrase, life, liberty, or the defense of property, and Jefferson turned it into life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Jefferson, in fact, if you want to know Jefferson's thoughts on Christianity, go buy the Jefferson Bible. Thomas Jefferson rewrote the New Testament. He took the four Gospels out of the New Testament, and he took all of the miracles out of them. He believed that Jesus was a philosopher who brought a vitally important message, a message of democracy, a message that was important to the United States, but that you didn't have to embellish him and make him divine in order to do that. It was Jefferson's idea. And the Jefferson Bible is still in print. You can buy it in bookstores. And his letters with Adams, of course, felt the same way. His letters with Adams are pretty articulate, pretty clear about this. I wrote a piece about this for Common Dreams some time back that has a whole bunch of quotes from Jefferson. If you want some good ammunition, if you're ever discussing this with somebody, just go to tomhartman.com, and up at the top, click on Articles on Democracy, and you'll find my article in there somewhere about the founders and religion in this country. 20 minutes past the hour, this is Tom Hartman, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Charles in Santa Fe, hang on the line. We'll pick you up right after this break. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Welcome and good evening. Soon, one of these lucky ladies will be crowned Miss Kumquat of Monroe County. The envelope, please. Miss Debbie Andrews. I have good news.
I can't believe I won.
You didn't.
Huh?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free. 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Want to know more about the many topics that Tom Hartman discusses on his show? There's one website that offers the best books on all of these critical issues. It's a full-service bookstore that offers thousands of books for a better world. Books you may never have seen anywhere else. It's online at 100fires.com. Books about how you can make a difference. About the rights of workers, healthy families, creating more livable communities, environmental protection, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. If you're tired of handing your hard-earned cash to corporate bookstores, check out 100fires.com. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
When people don't know what you mean, they may laugh at you and call you green. They say your words are stupid and your plans are only schemes. Truth is simple, but seldom ever. Let nothing come between simple man, simple dream.
Welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman, and John McCain has gotten into the battle here. This is an interesting story. I'll tell you about it after this call. Charles from Santa Fe has been patiently waiting on the line. Hey, Charles, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, Tom. I'm just actually driving through Santa Fe. I live closer down by El Paso, so you got some listeners down there, too.
Oh, great. Are you listening on Sirius, or are you picking us up on KTRC there in Santa Fe?
Yeah, but you mentioned that stuff by Ann Coulter just now, and I was so shocked. I mean, I've always been able to sort of disregard and ignore her. But that's a new low. I mean,
yeah, it is.
You know, it was a serious. It made me sick to hear those quotes.
It's really sad. I mean, you read her book, her books, Traitor and Treason, and you know, she's her trademark is to go over the top. You know, is to push things beyond what common sense or rationality or good manners or even necessarily truth would dictate, but. But to say that Max Cleland, you know, should that we should stop calling him a war hero, is despicable.
Well, I just like to hear an apology from her. That's all. You know, an admission that was over the top and was wrong.
Yeah. Well, I doubt you're going to get it. I doubt you're.
I know
get it,
but I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. There you go.
You're doing great, Tom. Keep it up.
Thank you, Charles, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Here we have Senator John McCain defended a fellow Vietnam veteran. This is from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, posted on Saturday. They've got this photograph where Jane Fonda is up in the front row and several rows back, John Kerry's sitting there. Fonda has since come out and said that she didn't know him. She didn't know that she was sitting anywhere near him. They didn't have anything to do with each other. But there's this guy, named Sampley. He's a businessman from Kingston, North Carolina, and he's running a website to attack Kerry for his opposition to Vietnam. And the website includes pictures from the 70s showing Kerry at anti-war demonstrations, and one has this picture. And so John McCain comes out. Oh, this guy Sampley, by the way, in 1993 was convicted of misdemeanor assault and sentenced to 180 days probation for attacking a legislative aide to John McCain. Apparently a man of strong political opinions. And John McCain has come out and, here's the article. Senator John McCain defended a fellow Vietnam War veteran Friday by attacking the credibility of a North Carolina veteran who has dedicated himself to defeating Senator John Kerry in his presidential campaign. McCain, Republican of Arizona, called Ted Sampley, quote, one of the most despicable people I have ever had the misfortune to encounter, end quote. So you got that. And then, as one of our callers noted earlier, this news story, this new photograph of that was taken, a photograph of John Kerry that was taken on a June Sunday in 1971. 20-year-old photographer documenting the country's struggle. This is from Newsday.com. Documenting the country's struggle over the Vietnam War, Ken Light, the name of the photographer, snapped the picture of John Kerry at a peace rally in Mineola. It captured the future senator alone at a podium, squinting into the sun. Light did not photograph Jane Fonda on that warm June Sunday in 1971. The actress did not even attend. But oddly, we're seeing this photo, Light's photo, is being emailed all over the place by all these Republicans with Jane Fonda doctored into it. I'm horrified, says Light, 52, who now heads a graduate photojournalism program at the University of California in Berkeley. Because I think this kind of alteration is probably one of the scariest forms of trickery, particularly when it's done against a political candidate. Amen. 29 minutes past the hour. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse-click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse-click away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Weather-related disasters are a growing drain on the global economy. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last year, floods, windstorms, heat waves, and other natural disasters caused $60 billion worth of damage around the world. Researchers who study weather-related disasters say the price tag has risen sharply in recent decades, and the trend is likely to continue. Thomas Loster works for the Munich Reinsurance Company in Germany, and he heads a UN commission that studies the costs of climate change and related disasters. Loster says the most expensive weather-related damage last year occurred in Europe, where a severe heat wave wilted crops and killed more than 20,000 people. In addition, China suffered heavy flooding, and the United States was hit hard by tornadoes in the Midwest. Loster says 2003 was one of the worst years in history in terms of weather-related damage. He says that rising expense is part of a long-term trend.
If we look at weather-related losses on the long run, comparing decades, we find tremendous increases in losses.
Loster says the economic costs of natural disasters were six times greater in the 1990s than they were in the 1960s. Loster says one reason for the increase in damage has to do with the weather itself. He says some extreme weather events, like the so-called 100-year floods and storms, are growing more frequent.
Every person can read that there is a 100-year event around the corner, and this tells us that they are no longer 100-year events, but the period has shortened.
Loster says the main reason for the increase in weather-related damage has to do with people. More and more people now live in disaster-prone places, and that means there's more high-value property that's now at risk. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. Get out there. Get involved. Write to your local newspaper. Send an email to somebody. Call your local elected official. Show up for a meeting. Join the PTA. There's so much you can do. There's so much you can do. There's so much you and I can do, each one of us, and that is what has made this country great and what will rescue it from the anti-democratic forces of aristocracy, plutocracy, and feudalism that have to a startling extent, taken over this country and that seek to completely control every dimension of our lives. We can't have it. Shar, did you say Bill in Mississippi dropped off? Okay, great. Here we have, I want to share, I got a couple of sound clips here I wanted to share with you. I had my earlier rant there on economics kind of went off in another direction. But this is the governor of Iowa, or Idaho, rather, Tom Vilsack. And he's at Georgetown University, and he's talking about the budget deficit. And this is, you know, keep in mind, George W. Bush's political and some would say lifetime patron was Ken Lay. And Bush changed laws in Texas to allow Enron to do what it did. The Republicans changed laws at the federal level to allow Enron to do many of the things that they did. And now Enron accounting has been brought to our government, our federal government, courtesy of Ken Lay's good buddy. Yeah, I mean, you know, remember in the 2000 election, George Bush was flying all over the country in Ken Lay's private jet. Anyhow, Governor Tom Vilsack at Georgetown University talking about the budget deficit that George Bush is projecting and what's really going on here.
Now, he's proposed this budget, which I would suggest to you is a remarkably phony document.
Yeah.
He admits that the deficit is $521 billion. Which means that he wants to borrow one out of every $4 that we're going to invest next year. One out of every $4.
You get that? I mean, I just want to say that. You know, I just want to emphasize that. One out of every $4 that the government is going to spend next year is going to be borrowed in your name and due and payable by you and your children along with interest. The interest in this coming year on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed, the last guy to go on a borrow and spend binge. You'll recall Jimmy Carter was the last president before Reagan to submit a balanced budget, and the next one after that was Bill Clinton. But Reagan went on a borrow and spend binge, and the amount that we're spending this year on the interest that Ronald Reagan borrowed is $178 billion. That's enough to hire almost 2 million full-time school teachers. That's enough to put, I don't know how many cops on the street. I mean, just what you could do with it's an amazing amount of money. I mean, after a while, people get money numb. You know, they don't know how to put things in context. These numbers are flying all over the place. It is a mind-boggling amount of money. Anyhow, back to Governor Vilsack.
But here's what the budget doesn't include. It doesn't include the cost of operations in Iraq. It doesn't include the cost of new tax cuts proposed by the administration. Because it extends only 5 years, it leaves out the crisis in Social Security or defense spending that the president said is needed, or the most massive of the president's tax cuts that come online.
See, this is classic Enron accounting.
Now, if a company had created for itself the long-term problems that this government has created, and the chief financial officer of that company presented to his or her CEO a budget like this one, he or she would likely have been fired. And if the CEO released the budget to the public, he or she would probably have an appointment with the SEC the next day.
Or like Ken Lay, they'd make off with millions, and, someday he may be brought to account on it. It's going to be interesting to find out. I mean, this is strange times we live in, as they say. Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle, who I had the pleasure of meeting in Washington a couple of weeks ago and talking with briefly, I was frankly very surprised. I was surprised by what a gentleman he was, soft-spoken, seemed to me like a kind person. You know, people, politicians, you know, a lot of us are easily fooled. I don't think I'm all that easily fooled. I've been around the block a few times. And I realize you don't get to be the Senate Majority Leader by always being a nice guy. But I have to say I was very impressed by Tom Daschle. So anyhow, that said, let me share with you a minute or so of his thoughts on the veterans' health care benefits. This is one dimension of this budget. George Bush has trotted out this budget. He said, okay, here's our priorities. We're discovering what, you know, compassionate conservative, you know, this oxymoron, what it means. You know, the first of all, there's no compassion in it. Secondly, there's no conservative in it. As many conservatives around America are beginning to point out, we're not conserving anything. We're spending like a drunken sailor. The last president to spend like this was Ronald Reagan. And before that, Herbert Hoover. Then we're sending our young men and women over to Iraq to fight and die to secure our oil supplies and Halliburton's profits. And having done that in this budget, how do we treat these people?
One fight that neither he or any veteran should have to face is the fight for health care and other benefits that our government has promised. Last week, for the third year in a row, President Bush proposed a budget that actually cuts the VA health care system and other critical veteran services.
For the third year in a row? How is it that this man can even show up at a military event without getting beaten black and blue? Well, you get the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and you learn how to in the military salute and do your job and not grumble and blah de blah. But how can he retain any popularity among the military? I would love to hear if a listener to this program today who is a member of the armed forces, either the reserved or the full time armed forces, and thinks well of George Bush. Please call me and tell me why. Please. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. 1-800-825-5937. We do not screen out negative calls on this show. We take all callers. 100%. You get the occasional drunk, but, you know, by and large, we take everybody. And in particular, I would like to hear from somebody who can tell me why so many veterans support George Bush in the face of this. So here's a little more from Tom Daschle on this.
According to the VA, it requires an average annual increase of 12 to 14% just to keep up with the medical inflation and to pay mandatory salary increases. The president's budget recommends an increase of just 2.5%. 77% of that increase would come straight out of the pockets of veterans themselves. For the first time, many veterans would have to pay an annual $250 user fee for health services.
Now, why is he doing this? Well, this is a little slick trick for all those veterans who are not, you know, who are broke. I mean, you got a lot of veterans who are unemployed, and $250 is a lot of money for them. You want to get them out of the program, you charge them $250 to get into the program, and it's going to cause a lot of the very poor veterans, or the hospitalized veterans, or the veterans who are on Social Security, or the veterans who have exhausted their benefits, it's going to cause them to not even be able to qualify for further medical benefits, as Tom Daschle points out.
These new fees and charges are expected to drive away 210,000 veterans from VA hospitals and clinics. At a time when thousands of American soldiers have been injured in Iraq, the President's budget cuts $21 million from the VA Medical and Prosthetic Research Program. The President's budget shortchanges disabled veterans. Instead of reducing the current backlog of 350,000 disability claims, as the administration has promised.
You get that? 350,000 disabled veterans have submitted claims for which they're getting no response?
The budget will make the backlog even worse. The President's budget does nothing to reduce the disabled veterans tax, which penalizes veterans by deducting their disability benefits from their retirement pay.
Wait a minute. You get disabled, you get benefits for it, and that gets taken out of your military retirement pay? How could...
Last year, the President threatened to veto our repeal of this tax, but we held firm and cut the tax for some disabled veterans. This year, the President simply ignores it. By ignoring it, it won't go away. The President's budget is a statement of priorities and a statement of choices. In this budget, the White House has insisted that tax cuts for those at the top are more important than sufficient health care for America's veterans. As a veteran and as a member of the Senate...
He goes on to say, I find this unacceptable. Sorry about the end of the clip there. Anyhow, that's Senator Tom Daschle, the Senate Majority Leader. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, Chuck from New Mexico. Chuck, I'm guessing you're not a veteran calling to tell me you love George Bush.
I'm a veteran, and I'm definitely not calling to tell you I love George Bush.
Okay. What's up, Chuck?
Here's the thing that really gets me. I've heard comments from people saying, well, you know, he was AWOL and this and that. I served about that time. I was in from 70 to 76. And once you're gone more than 30 days, you're not AWOL anymore. You are a deserter. And the
well, that's from the regular. That's from the regular service. The guard actually has a different set of terms.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you. Whatever. The bottom line is that when you're absent for an extended period, the military takes this pretty seriously. Back during declared war, we actually stood up and shot a Private Edward Slovak at the end of World War II. So you know, this is not a trivial thing, and that's probably why it's not going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, probably. I suspect you're right, Chuck. Particularly if these people keep coming forward and saying, well, I was there and he wasn't, and I remember it. Chuck, thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, 1-800-825-5937. Shannon from Georgia's on the line. Hey, Shannon.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I am great. What's up?
Well, I'm not calling to tell you I love George Bush. I'm currently serving in the U.S. Army. And I've been talking.
Congratulations. I honor you for that.
I am about to become a disabled veteran, so hopefully I'll be getting out within the next few months here. But basically, the people that I talk to around here, those who are in favor of George Bush or who like George Bush, they're just not getting any kind of news about this, about taking away our benefits. They're not seeing this on, the mainstream news. A lot of them watch Fox, of course, which is bad. But
Stars and Stripes has reported on this stuff, Shannon.
What's that?
Stars and Stripes has been reporting on this stuff. I've read several good news stories in Stars and Stripes, the newspaper that goes out.
I have, too. Stars and Stripes is actually pretty good, a pretty objective source from, what I've seen.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people that I talk to, they base how good a president does for the military on how big their pay raise is. And I was talking with a buddy of mine just recently, and he was like, well, Bush has done great things for the military. I'm like, what do you mean? He said, well, in 2001, I got the biggest pay raise I've ever received. And I was like, that was Clinton's pay raise. That was Clinton's military budget. He's like, no, it wasn't. I'm like, yeah, it was. That was Clinton's military budget because Bush's budget didn't come into effect until
it's all
October
done a year in advance.
October 1st, 2001 was when Bush's first budget went into effect.
Yeah.
And he got his pay raise in January 2001. And we've been getting standard pay raises, but the benefits to married soldiers, to soldier with children, unfortunately I don't have to try to raise kids while I'm in the Army or maintain a relationship or a marriage while I'm in, but the benefits to married soldiers, to soldiers with children, are just dropping through the floor.
And
a lot of the soldiers that I'm around just don't see that because, you know, a lot of them are not married, or they don't know that the benefits are going away. It's almost like it's subtle, but they don't really understand. They haven't been in long enough, or they're not really paying attention.
Yeah, or they don't have a basis for comparison. They haven't been around long enough to remember. Shannon, were you over in Iraq by any chance?
No, I wasn't. Fortunately, I injured myself over in Korea, and I was all lock-kneed when the war started, so I couldn't go.
Yeah. What are you hearing from folks who are, you know, you're in the Army there. You must be having contact with folks who are coming back. What's your sense of the average guy or girl?
They hate it. They hated the experience, absolutely despised the experience. That's the majority of the people that I talk to.
Well, I'd say that's true of guys in World War II, too, but they also believed in what they were doing. I mean, you know, what's their sense of the politics of it?
The belief in what they're doing, a lot of them are just, some of them are like, yeah, I believe that we're doing the right thing, you know, I don't know why. But a lot of them are saying, we're over there for no reason, it's pointless. We're getting killed over there for no good reason. A lot of the guys that I'm seeing coming back, you know, they weren't in frontline units. I'm in a communications company.
Got about 10 seconds.
We weren't in frontline units.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for the story, thanks for the feedback, and thanks for the enlightenment. I appreciate your call, Shannon. Thank you for calling. This is Tom Hartman. It's 10 minutes before the hour. You're with the IE America Radio Network, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Hartman Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
This
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Handy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All those insecurities that have held me down for so long, I can't say I've found a cure for these, but at least I know that so they're not so strong. Look for your dreams in heaven, but what the hell are you supposed to do when they come?
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE, where they have some really and truly extraordinary beverages, if you're into wine, and if you're into wine that doesn't contain chemicals that may cause problems. Louise just handed me this. Both the Madison Capital Times and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the two major newspapers in Wisconsin, which state is holding a primary tomorrow, have endorsed John Edwards. An interesting turn of events. Our program, by the way, produced by Louise Hartman here in Montpelier, Vermont today. The board run, the engineering done in Detroit by Shar Jones. Brad Walrod in Detroit New York City has edited our music, and thanks especially to the chat room folks who went to tomhartman.com and clicked on the various chat links and got into our chat room. Thanks for hanging out with us. Mike is on the line from Florida. Hey, Mike, we got a couple minutes left. What's on your mind?
Okay, Tom, nice hearing from you again. I just got a quick trip down memory lane about Helen Thomas. I remember this from the 60s. Helen Thomas has always been a hard-hitting reporter, even in the Kennedy administration.
She used to give Richard Nixon hell.
Well, you know, the one thing I remember, and Jack Kennedy was conducting a press conference from her one time, and he let off the statement when he called on her. He says, "Miss Thomas, I don't know what it is, but already I know I'm in deep trouble." You know.
Yeah.
And that brought down the house, but, you know, and then she wailed into him about something, not having enough women in the administration and that sort of thing. But
and now George Bush has moved her to the back of the room and refuses to call on her anymore.
Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. Now, I mean, here we have, this is what we've come down to. In the old days where a president would get up there and say, "Let me have it," and then to a day where, okay, we're going to put you in the back of the room or not answer your questions.
It's now petty stuff, spin control, spin management, and revenge. That's That's, unfortunately, seems to be the basis of this administration's policies. Mike, thanks for the call. Nice to hear from you. I appreciate it. About 2 minutes before the hour, this is Tom Hartman. Thanks for joining us today. Happy President's Day. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2004.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America.